BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
If I told you that there were apps where single people can be preyed upon by rapists, murderers and fraudsters, would you sign up? I have. In fact, I pay for the pleasure. At 35 years old, still going solo, 2020 was my year, until this.
There now follows a ministerial broadcast from the Prime Minister.
I urge you, at this moment of national emergency, to stay at home, protect our NHS, and save lives.
My dating life was about to shrink to the size of my phone, reduced to an online catalogue of men. But that made me wary. I've had my fair share of online dates, some weird, some funny, and at least three experiences I hope I never have to repeat. One was verbally abusive, one obsessive, and the worst made me realise how vulnerable a 5'6" woman is faced with a 6'4" man. And as lockdown has driven singletons online in their millions, I want to explore the risk posed to users just like me. From fraud...
I would go for older women. For them to be on a dating app means that they're a bit desperate.
To sexual assault.
And when he entered that clearing, I understood what he really wanted.
And even murder.
I think I ran out of the room and then I just sort of collapsed. There was his coat on the chair and I picked that up and then I ran past the liaison officer and ran into his bedroom.
With few or even no checks on those who subscribe, who's failing to protect the unprecedented number of men and women who are looking for love online?
It's something that I used to do a lot because, like, it's one of the easiest ways to get money, to be honest. If you've got a girl there and she works and she's into you, why not ask her to send money over, innit? Sometimes I'll get, like, even upwards to grand. Like, the most I've ever got off a girl, not at once, but is, what, about 10 grand.
This is Jamie, a 20-something who's just been released from jail. He says he's conned older women out of tens of thousands of pounds while he was serving time using an illegal mobile phone from his prison cell.
With that specific girl, my mate put me onto her. He must have told me, like, rah, like, there's a girl there. And rah, like, she's rich in it, but obviously she's not that nice looking, but I think you can slide through. So I said, yeah, say nothing, cool, just give me a number. At that time, I had a phone in jail and everything, so at first, I didn't even tell her I was in jail because I didn't know how she was going to react. Then slowly, when I realised that I've got her, she likes me. I think the best thing to do, yeah, let me just show her I'm in jail. She said, oh, it's all good, I don't care. Do you need money? I was like, all right, like that, cool. Then from then, it just, every week, I was getting like £100 to £200 in my, like, literally, I was not on no diet in jail. So, like, I did my thing. And she, I don't chat to her no more because I think she basically realised that I was only in it for the money car.
In 2020, there were nearly 7,000 reports of so-called romance fraud. That's when a potential love interest you meet online cons you out of money. It cost the victims almost £70 million last year, and according to UK Finance, there was a 20% increase in bank transfers relating to romance fraud during the pandemic. You mentioned this woman that you targeted who you got thousands of pounds out of, and you said she wasn't that good looking. Why does that make a difference?
Because if I was to go for an Instagram model, she's not really going to give me any attention knowing that I'm in jail, is she? If I tell her to send money, she's not gonna really listen to me. It sounds bad, but, like, yeah, man, I'll look for a girl that'll feel like she's lonely, innit? She ain't really got attention like that. And if a good-looking man pops out of the blue and gives her attention, more times she'll do anything to keep that relationship right.
Jamie's modus operandi is simple, but there are an increasing number of scammers who are much more sophisticated.
These fraudsters are incredibly clever, and they often work as part of organised criminal networks, and they're very well versed and educated, not just in the methodology, but also the application of the crime. So they groom for extensive periods. The demands they make are very convincing, very plausible, and they've woven those lies into conversations over several months.
PC Bernadette Laurie of Sussex Police was the UK's first financial abuse safeguarding officer.
Lockdowns created the perfect landscape for fraudsters, really. Obviously, it's a crime type that's enabled by the internet, and therefore it's been able to carry on worldwide despite the lockdown. So where some physical crime types have been hampered by curfews and lockdown restrictions, obviously a crime like this has been enabled to continue. When I say it's created the perfect landscape for fraudsters, that's because loneliness, isolation, removal of that physical interaction and social contact for people has been so unprecedented. And obviously people have seen changes in their own personal relationships as well. So they've been resorting to online contact and online relationships on a scale that we haven't seen before. So sadly, coming hand in hand with an increase in online dating, obviously you're going to have an increase in online dating fraud.
I've heard of scammers actually operating over illegal mobile phones while in prison. Have you heard of any cases like that?
Yeah, I have. And I think this is the real problem with fraud. And it's something that I often pick up on, because you can't commit a burglary from prison. But if you've got a mobile phone, you can still commit a fraud. And I think it's a really indicative of how rife this crime type can be.
Traditionally, what was the sort of demographic that you'd see being the victim of a romance fraud?
Well, I think romance fraud can affect anybody. I think what's really noticeable is that the fraudulent element is going to affect people of an older age, and that's because they've got more money to part with in the main.
It's a fact that's not lost on our romance fraudster, Jamie.
I would go for older girls, older women. Like, for them to be on a dating app means that they're a bit desperate. Look at their bio. If it says certain things, the key words to me would be looking for a relationship, I just want happiness or something like that. Those kind of things. I don't know. It's just you would tell after a while, trial and error, just become an expert, to be honest. Look for the desperation.
I'd had a few scammers before, and they were very quickly into, like, 2 or 3 days asking for money for various things, like, you know, spilt coffee on the computer or they lost their credit card, etc. But then Kevin came along and he was charming. He was interested in myself.
Di Pogson is 59. Her husband Ian died unexpectedly when he was 60, just before their 30th wedding anniversary. A year later, and racked with loneliness, Di signed up to a dating app called Plenty of Fish, where she met Kevin, a jet-setting businessman, charming, and if the photographs he sent Di were anything to go by, he was also incredibly good-looking. Strangely, though, he always had a reason not to show his face on Skype or FaceTime.
Maybe about 2 weeks into the chats, he was away on business, and the dog carer had reported him that the dog was very ill and had to go to the vet, and the vet was wanting money before they would treat the dog, and if it wasn't treated then it was going to die. It started off at just under £500 for the vet, then it was £1,000 for the vet, and it progressed, and it was every other day, every 3 days, and the sums would gradually go up. I think the most he ever asked for was £4,500. I always had it in the back of my mind that I would never, ever be conned. I was too savvy.
In just 6 weeks, Di transferred £40,000 to Kevin, her entire life savings.
When I completely ran out of money, I hadn't any more to give him. You know, he called me all sorts of names, I was lying, and he stopped answering his phone, stopped replying to messages. So alarm bells rang. So I went to the police, because if I didn't, There was no chance of them ever being found. I told the children, which was horrible, having to tell them I'd lost so much money to somebody I'd never met. Felt stupid, ridiculous, small, gullible.
But that was only the half of it. Not only had Di given away all her money, she quickly found out from police that Kevin didn't even exist.
I was an emotional wreck. It was almost like... to say it was a bereavement after such a short time is quite excessive, but it was a loss. You had built up this fantasy that we were going to have this idyllic life together, and the bad years I'd had since my husband died were going to be a mystery. I'll never, ever forget my husband. But there was light at the end of the tunnel, and that had just been completely smashed away again.
It transpired that Kevin was the creation of a gang of three fraudsters who'd been preying on vulnerable women across the south of England. Romance fraudster Jamie wasn't involved in fleecing Di, but he has defrauded dozens of other women.
Many people think these are serious relationships. How do you feel about that?
Well, like, how do robbers feel about robbing other people? It's just the way it is. I just want money. That's it. I don't really think about the other person. If I do, then I'll feel guilty. And I don't need guilt.
It's mad. Having spoken to Jamie, I can totally see how with his charisma and charm, he has the deadly combination that could entice dating app users like me. And clearly, he's not alone. According to the National Fraud Intelligence Bureau, also known as Action Fraud, there was a 17% increase in dating scams last year. And it's not just fraud. Farlon 4 contacted every one of the 43 police forces in the UK to ask about all crimes associated with dating apps. 25 of those police forces came back to us with data. That shows there's been a year-on-year increase in the total number of crimes. 727 in 2018, 841 in 2019, and 903 in 2020. That's an increase of 24% over 3 years. Of these, there were more than 550 sexual offences, 422 crimes involving stalking and harassment, and more than 400 cases of theft. We should make it clear, though, that this is only a snapshot of what's going on around the UK. We had no figures from Scotland or Northern Ireland, and the Metropolitan Police and Greater Manchester Police both failed to provide data.
Everybody knew me for the laughing, bubbly person that I was. I was probably one of the most outgoing in my year at school. I was happy. I thought I was invincible, really, like any kind of 13-year-old feels. Like, you just think nothing could happen to you.
This is Tom. But for reasons that will become apparent, that's not his real name. It's also an actor speaking his words. But for the making of this programme, I did speak to the teenage boy whose story we're about to hear. He's 16 now, but this happened when he was 13.
So I come out gay, and I kind of very quickly realised that there wasn't anybody of my age to talk to, and I felt quite alone.
Even though he was only 13, it didn't take Tom long to discover the dating app Grindr.
I don't know why, but in my head I kind of thought, oh, yeah, you know, there's lots of gay people on there, you know? I can just talk to them. And then I joined. It was as easy as anything. I managed to get on properly within a couple minutes, if that. I created an account. They asked me if I was over 18. I said yes. I know that I've always looked younger, like, because of my height. The way I looked had quite a baby face. So I'd say I used a photo that tried to make me look older, but any normal person would know. Do you know what I mean? When I started speaking to this person, he asked my age, and yes, I told him.
The man moved their conversation off Grindr and onto WhatsApp, where the grooming continued. The teenager was saved in the 50-year-old's phone as sexy. Tom was then lured into meeting his attacker not once, but twice. The meetups were arranged by the older man, once in a car park and once at the perpetrator's home. On both occasions, Tom was sexually assaulted.
I trusted him. We spoke about stranger danger, you know, all sorts of things being safe online.
Tom's mum, Anna, had no idea her son had met an older man until she was alerted to messages on his phone. Again, I interviewed her for this programme, but her words are spoken by an actor.
I basically went through his phone, discovered messages that he'd been talking to someone. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. It was obvious, reading the messages, that they were inappropriate. It was obvious that it was from an older person, and I was shocked. Obviously, I mentioned the police. He was adamant. He'd do anything. He was sorry, but please don't phone the police. And so to explain that, as a parent, I have to do the right thing.
The perpetrator was sentenced last year to 4.5 years in jail, made subject of a lifelong sexual harm prevention order, and must sign on to the sex offenders register for life.
I thought it was my fault because I put myself in the situation. I got depression. I've got anxiety. I stayed in my room for a whole year. I didn't go out, really. I won't ever be able to forget about this. It did kind of ruin my life massively. One simple account can ruin your whole life completely.
Sites that should have age restrictions on them, and then they clearly don't, because, you know, for someone underage to be able to access it as easily as he did, I mean, they clearly don't, and obviously the perpetrator as well. I don't understand. If they're made for a specific age, then surely you should have to prove who you are and how old you are. Someone needs to monitor what's going on these sites. And, you know, verification. I think the government should look into it and make changes. I think there needs to be huge changes. And I think the government needs to get behind it.
We asked Grindr why a 13-year-old boy was able to sign up to their app. They didn't respond to the question. Instead, they told us they utilise a combination of human and automated tools to prevent underage users. They also said they were speaking to officials in the UK to explore measures to address online harms. In 2019, the former Culture Secretary, Jeremy Wright, demanded to know what measures were in place to protect children amid concerns that minors were being targeted by predators on these sites. He met with Match Group, who owns sites like Tinder and Plenty of Fish, but the Department for Culture, Media and Sport wouldn't disclose what was said during the meeting. Tony Stower is from Five Rights, a charity that works to make online spaces safer for children.
Well, there's very little safeguards on these apps to protect children. The main way, of course, would be for services to uphold their own terms and conditions and put in place really robust age verification measures for all users. This would make sure that it is really only adults that are using them. It's incredibly risky for children to go on these because we've seen many cases where children have been on the apps and experienced some horrific abuse at the hands of adults. What's really important is that children are given the right tools to understand that these services aren't for them, and crucially, that the services uphold their own terms and conditions. That means putting in place really robust age verification and assurance measures to make sure that children aren't allowed onto their platform in the first place.
In the US, online dating companies are able to screen users against a national sex offenders register. However, in the UK, companies can't access the same kind of information and are unable to identify anyone with a criminal record. So even those with a catalogue of sex offences to their name are able to sign up. Like Patrick Nevin, who had 8 previous convictions for violent and sexual crimes. He befriended 32-year-old Brazilian student Maria on Tinder.
When I arrived in Ireland, a lot of people told me it would be easier to learn English if I became friends with the Irish so that I could understand how to talk like them. I had just arrived and I had broken up my relationship in Brazil, so I wasn't looking for a boyfriend, but I wanted to meet people.
Maria, whose words are being spoken by an actor, arranged to meet Nevin for a coffee.
I got in his car. It was a blue BMW, and I can still remember the details because I still don't like to see those things. There were beige leather seats. It was a reasonably new car.
But it soon became apparent they were driving to a more remote area in the opposite direction to the coffee shop.
At one point, we entered a narrow dirt street with trees on both sides, in some houses far away. I couldn't understand anything, and I didn't know how to ask him where this cafe he was taking me to was. But in my head I was thinking, maybe it's some little village, one of those little closed town centers, some place he likes and wants to show me. And when he entered that clearing, I understood what he really wanted. When he locked the doors and started to grab me, I despaired. I scratched him and slapped him. He pulled me and grabbed me by the wrists. He punched me in the back of my head. It swelled. It was a fight that probably lasted seconds inside that car, but it was so rough that it felt like hours to me. I was wearing a long-sleeved dress, which had a bit of an open collar. He pulled it down and exposed the upper part of my breasts. I grew more and more desperate until he hit my head and I lunged forward in the car. Then I managed to find the button that unlocked the doors and press it. Then I jumped and rolled out of the car and screamed. When I did that, I think he got scared. He turned the car on, sped up, and left me there on the ground. My phone was on my lap, so it fell with me, which was fortunate. Otherwise, I would have been completely lost. But it was terrible, because someone who had been really sweet, it was as if he was an animal, a monster, someone unrecognizable.
When the case got to court, Nevin was sentenced to 14 years after it was revealed that Maria was just one of three victims that Nevin had attacked over an 11-day period, and he'd met them all on Tinder.
To this day, I'm afraid of using dating apps. I have friends who have met the love of their lives, who have married people they met on Tinder and other platforms. But I had a terrible experience. There should be some kind of checking process beforehand. I still don't have a normal relationship life, that's a fact. After you go through something like that, it's never the same. You'll never have the same level of trust in people, not even to go grab a cup of coffee. It left a mark in me, and it won't disappear overnight. I can't forget the smell of that car, those leather seats, the color of the car, the way he looked at me, the way he hit me.
We asked Tinder, which is owned by the Match Group, for a response to this case. They said that when anyone is reported to them for violent behaviour, they remove and block the perpetrator's account from all of their platforms. They say they treat incidents of sexual assault with the utmost urgency and will always work with law enforcement to ensure justice is served. Solicitor Rachel Horman is chair of Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service.
As far as I'm aware, there isn't anything specific in terms of legislation. Victims can rely on the normal criminal law in terms of stalking or assault, rape, etc. But as far as I'm aware, there isn't anything specific to protect victims in this way. Publicity around this seems to be aimed at victims changing their behaviour, users of the app, make sure you don't do this, make sure you don't say that. And actually the focus needs to be on the perpetrators and closing down the perpetrators and preventing them from using it. So if they have got convictions, then they shouldn't be allowed to use those apps. If they've got convictions for sexual offences or stalking or domestic abuse, that type of serial offence. And also, I think the companies need to do much more. When victims report problems with users, perpetrators will make connections with dozens and dozens of victims, some of whom are children. That's the other issue, that there's no checks really in terms of how old some of the users of dating apps are, and children are being groomed and then assaulted by perpetrators that are utilising dating apps to find their victims.
The forthcoming online harms bill is currently making its way through Parliament. The government says when the new laws come into force, they'll keep children safe online on all platforms. They say dating sites will need to stop young people from accessing their services, and there'll be tough sanctions for those firms that fail to do so. They say the burden of proof on who's using their platforms will be on the companies themselves, but it's unclear how this will be enforced. Tony Starr from the charity Five Rights again.
The answer to this massive problem is government regulation. That is the only way that the dating app companies are going to get their houses in order. We've already seen some changes to online services from a result of the Age Appropriate Design Code coming into force. The Online Harms Bill has to be the answer in providing really robust regulation that requires these companies to put in place this system. And that means that Five Rights and other organisations are lobbying the government, we're working with Parliament, and we are trying to put in place the absolute best verification system that protects children and that keeps adult users safe as well.
So just how easy would it be for the dating sites to monitor their platforms for predators and to stop underage users? Eliza May Austin is a cybersecurity expert.
It's definitely technically possible. Yes, it is. The barriers to doing this are very much around finance and resource. So if you think, if you then have to go and implement this, you have to pay for loads of hosting space and you have to pay for staff to manage it full time. To manage it when it goes down, you've got to pay for support contracts from these providers as well. So it's massively expensive. While they don't need to do it to satisfy any legal obligation, they won't.
So what are the repercussions of this failure to verify whether someone is who they say they are?
I could, at the very least, waste someone's time. At the very worst, I could isolate someone in a space that I know and commit a heinous crime, a sex offence or murder.
I did emphasise it only takes one person. If you meet the wrong person, then that's it, and your life could be over. And then he laughed and replied, well, that will never happen.
Beverly Davies remembering her teenage son Alex, a fun-loving, hard-working and gentle young man who had friends but had yet to meet the one he wanted to settle down with.
Alex was an absolutely brilliant son. He was kind, caring, and just an absolute wonderful son to have. He was a very kind-hearted boy, and he did a lot of charity work. And from there on, he progressed to Home Bargains, where he excelled himself, and he'd just been promoted to a senior sales position. And he had a great love of music. He absolutely adored ABBA.
Alex was 18. He'd signed up to Grindr and had been exchanging messages with another teenager, Brian Healis. On a Monday afternoon in April 2019, he got in a taxi to go and meet Healis at Parbold Hill, a remote walking spot in West Lancashire. That night, he didn't come home.
I wasn't unduly worried about the Monday evening because I thought he was just probably at friends. But by the time it got to Tuesday morning, I was extremely concerned. And then I started ringing round and then I ended up calling the police.
So on the Wednesday, he still hadn't returned. And that's when things sort of took a turn for the worse.
This is Alex's best friend, Leon, who by Thursday was getting increasingly concerned.
Still at that time, we still hadn't heard of him. Nothing had changed on any of his social media accounts. There was no activity on there. And it was really, really not normal for Alex not to be on social media because he was always on it in that respect. He was always in contact with someone.
On Thursday, local media began reporting that a body had been found on Parbold Hill. That evening, Mum Beverly had a knock at the door.
The liaison officer, there was two of them, and one of them interrupted me and just said, the body is Alex's. And that's when, heard the terrible news my boy had been murdered. I think I ran out of the room. And then I just sort of collapsed. And then I there was his coat on the chair and I picked that up and then I ran past the liaison officer and ran into his bedroom.
Brian Healis had murdered Alex by stabbing him 128 times. At the time of the killing, Healis was only 17 years old, yet he'd been able to sign up to Grindr even though the platform has an age restriction of 18 years old.
What's more, when police seized his phone, they discovered he'd also lined up to meet a 15-year-old boy who was also using the app. At his trial, the judge in the case told Helis that it was extremely fortunate that he was arrested before anyone else suffered the same fate.
It makes me feel very angry. The fact that he's on there and he's not of age, it's really, really bad. But to me, it sort of highlights, obviously, the loopholes and the weaknesses in age verification for certain dating apps. I believe they should put in some form of legislation where people have to be of the age of 18 and onwards in order to use dating apps.
It's just too easy, you know, for children to download them. And then there's absolutely no proof. They don't ask for the real name or the date of birth, even like with the profile pictures as well. Could be anybody, couldn't it?
Grindr do ask users for their date of birth. But as with many of these apps, they don't verify that information. The company told File & Four that the responsibility for keeping users safe should not be shouldered by the app developers alone. They said while they do have a role to play, so do the app stores, who Grindr say are privy to much more information on users. Neil Henderson is from the charity Safeline, an organisation that supports victims of sexual abuse.
I do think there's also a role for the dating app companies to do an awful lot more themselves, and maybe even governments to help enforce those kind of things as well. I think it needs to be a two-pronged approach where dating app companies take a lot more responsibility for the protection of their users. At the moment, they seem to put all accountability onto the users and they'll make recommendations, you know, please take care, but it's not enough. They're not doing enough. Over the last 5 years, the number of people that we're supporting who have been affected or who have been abused by somebody who they met online has increased about sixfold. But since the lockdown, we've seen a significant increase in the number of cases as well. We reckon about a 50% increase in the number of cases. And that's no surprise. I mean, you know, people have become increasingly socially isolated.
So if the apps are unlikely to act and there's no specific legislation governing online dating, what can you and I do to better protect ourselves? Wayne May heads up Scam Survivors, a network of volunteers who patrol the internet for predators. How can you spot a fake profile?
With the photographs, quite often they are stolen. It's very rare that a scammer will actually use their own face. So if you look at the pictures, you may recognise the person instantly, or you could run it through something like TinEye or Google Image Search and it may pull up who it really is. The scammers want you off the website as quickly as they can, because if that profile gets reported and shut down, they have no way to contact you anymore.
When File & Four collated data from 25 police forces in England and Wales, it showed the number of crimes relating to dating sites dropped significantly during the first lockdown in 2020. But when we emerged from restrictions last year, the data showed a huge rise in cases, a trend which corresponded with people meeting up again. So now there are big concerns that as the UK heads into spring and summer, there could be another wave of crime.
If you are going to meet somebody in person after the lockdown, do it in a safe place. Let people know where you're going, what time you're leaving, what time you should be back. Just protect yourself. Be sure that you're not left alone with this person. If you're in a pub or a bar or anything like that, if you're uncomfortable, speak to a member of staff. Let them know that you're not happy with what's happening so they can keep an eye on you as well. If they're asking to meet you in a remote location, don't. First date, first few dates even, always in public, always where there are a lot of people around so that you are in a safe environment. If somebody's asking to meet you without anybody else around, then be very, very wary.
Solicitor Rachel Horman says the authorities need to act before the surge in online dating users during lockdown becomes a surge in crimes.
Perhaps before dating apps, people would have to meet people in the pub, etc. It's very time consuming. You might only meet one or two people over the course of an evening. But when you're using a dating app, you can literally make contact with dozens and dozens of victims in a very short space of time. This problem is huge, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse, particularly with the restrictions from the coronavirus, for example. You can't meet people in any other way. So this situation is not going to improve. And I think the government and the police need to take it far more seriously.
This File on 4 podcast was presented by Livy Haydock and produced by me, Michael Cowan. The editor was Carl Johnson. It was a BBC Radio Current Affairs production for BBC Sounds, where you can find more radio, music, and podcasts.